Food heist.
Food heist. You excited for this?
I don't know. Should I be excited for this?
You should be, because okay. It's so great.
Okay.
This was in Pennsylvania. It was updated today.
Wow. Breaking so, yeah. Food news.
Breaking news. So, there was a guy who went to the giant supermarket in okay. Exeter Township.
Okay.
And he tried to steal $400 worth of brisket.
Brisket, okay.
Now, so far, this doesn't seem very cool, right?
No, but brisket is good.
Brisket's good, but it's only $400. Yeah. So that's like 5 briskets.
Yes.
And he only tried to steal them. He didn't even succeed.
Okay.
Here's
okay.
what makes this great. Police suspect that the same dude
mm-hmm.
attempted to steal $375 worth of rechargeable toothbrushes.
You know, a toothbrush, some of those tines get into your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
They are kind of food.
Well, and they're certainly food-related.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he tried to steal the toothbrushes in anticipation
yeah.
of stealing the brisket.
Okay.
And then they just got him, and they stopped him from stealing either one. So there's 2 more things that I love about this. First of all, the still unidentified man, so he's still at large,
mm-hmm.
dropped these toothbrushes in the Rite Aid parking lot while running away.
Mm-hmm.
Ditto for the meat, which the giant supermarket employees were able to recover. So he didn't even get very far. I think the fact he just dropped them and ran
yeah.
is amusing to me.
Yeah, he's definitely not getting into food heist prison.
No.
This is too much
of
a schmuck.
Frankly, this guy's not getting into prison at all because he has so far failed to commit any crimes. And then the cop says that this happens a lot. It's the high dollar items, the baby formula, the packaged meat, the razors, the high-end cosmetics, which makes me wonder if those are all, like, is he listing generic examples?
Mm-hmm.
Or did somebody steal those, like, 4 or 5 specific things for some nefarious purpose? What is somebody doing with packaged meat and high-end cosmetics and razors?
Boy, you know, maybe they're planning another heist. And this is like, you know, how in yeah. Ocean's 11, you got a heist
mm-hmm.
to then use all the items you've stolen. So for some reason, yeah. he needed toothbrushes. He needed brisket. He needed razors and high-end cosmetics
mm-hmm.
and baby formula.
And baby formula.
Yeah.
That's important.
These items combine in some way to help him pull off a better heist.
Much bigger heist yes. down mm-hmm. the line.
Yeah.
So, and then my final favorite thing about this article is, you know, there's links to, if you're reading this, you might be interested in other stories, right? And one of them says, and I have not clicked on the link because there's no way it could live up to this hype. Pennsylvania organ collector under federal investigation over potential fraud.
Ugh.
So is this someone who
collects organs, music?
Musical organs yeah. or human organs? Also, is that really the best term? For the guy, like,
yeah,
are they talking about organ donor organs?
You need to click on it now. You need to report to us next week what this actually is. Because if it is someone who collects organs, like music,
mm-hmm.
maybe don't call them an organ collector.
Yeah.
Maybe call them a high-end music enthusiast, a musical device enthusiast.
Well,
I don't know.
And it's the potential fraud that I love. Because
yeah.
without that, it could just be the name of a serial killer. The Pennsylvania organ collector is at large again. But no, he's fraudulently collecting organs.
Oh, man. The organ collector. That's a good... You got to use that in one of your books sometime.
I know. The Pennsylvania organ collector.
Yeah.
Who drops all his organs in the Rite Aid parking lot.
So I was thinking about brisket. And, you know, I'm trying to come up with a cool name for this guy, but then he doesn't deserve it, right? He does not mm-hmm. get a cool name. If you drop your brisket in the parking lot and run, then we're not going to give you a cool name. But I did wonder this question for our Jewish listeners. Do you commonly serve brisket at a bris? Right? Like, someone does that, right? Then you
sure.
have the brisket.
Well, and brisket is a Jewish thing. If you prepare a pot roast
yeah.
in a Jewish style, it's brisket.
Really?
Which is different from like smoked brisket.
Okay, I get it. Okay.
Yeah. It's a real thing.
Does the rabbi bring a little bag that is his brisket to perform the bris.
Oh.
So for a bris, you need your brisket and your brisket. Your brisket.
Your brisket and your brisket.
Yes.
Wow.
So let us know in the comments.
That's important. Okay, so I clicked the link for the organ collector, and it's a podcast that I'm not going to listen to.
Okay.
But we do have...
We don't listen to podcasts. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What a low-end art form.
Listen to this. What it just says is, today in Pennsylvania, daily podcast, feds are looking into organ collection groups across the country over suspicions of fraud. So this is not limited to Pennsylvania.
No, and that does sound like organ donor organs.
And then there is no explanation whatsoever, and without any segue, the very next sentence says, Allegheny County officials have once again sued the United States' largest Coke manufacturer.
Okay.
And they did not capitalize Coke.
Whoops.
So this is not Coca-Cola. They're suing, like, Pablo Escobar.
No. Do you also call one of the...
Coke, like for alloys in metallurgy.
Yep. If the,
it might be.
Yeah. So it could actually be, right? I mean, this is Pennsylvania. That's the coal. And Coke comes from coal, I believe.
Could be.
And so...
Or Coke is coal used fuel, with coal?
Yeah. Coal-based fuel with high carbon content.
But it says Coke manufacturer, not like Coke collector.
Well, I mean, you have to, I think you have to manufacture Coke. I don't think it comes out it comes out as coal and you turn it into.
You turn it into Coke?
Yeah.
That's why it's so delicious.
Am I right on that, little Donald? You have to make Coke out of coal? Or maybe I'm wrong. I'm not from West Virginia and that area where a lot of coal mining happens.
Okay, so the next sentence says, we all got a taste of spring this week. And the final sentence is, a World War II vet turns 103. So there's just a roller coaster of emotions in Pennsylvania this week.
So Coke can be made by heating coal or oil in the absence of air. So mainly, but it can also naturally form by geological processes.
Okay.
So either way.
For those unfamiliar, the voice you just heard was unpaid intern Donald.
Paid unpaid intern. His title is unpaid intern, but we do pay him. I'm going to make that very clear because it is my company.
I know. And I will never get tired of making you clarify that. Anyway, what have you got going on in your life this March?
Well, we don't know yet how our crowdfunding campaign's going because we have to record a whole slew of these intentionally blanks because during March I'll be doing live streams. You get the month off from at least having to see me.
Which is good because I'm going to be out of town next week. But today is March 1st. We are recording this knowing that we're launching a crowdfunding thing on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, March 5th.
But this will air, unpaid intern Donald, do you know when this will air?
From our backlog, probably sometime in May. Comments, you can tell me
May?
If I'm wrong. May or April.
Can we swap this one into March sometime?
Probably, yes.
Okay, let's swap this one into March.
Well, I thought we had to race to get a bunch done before March.
Yeah, what's going on?
March.
Let's see, because we'll have
We've got all the way up to May?
Looking at it now, probably middle or end of April, if I'm looking at what I've got on my back.
I mean, we are going to C2E2 also, which knocks out one of the days that I could have recorded.
Yeah, we're being extra vigilant, to my understanding.
Okay. Well, there we are.
So anyway, the point is, by the time you all hear this, we will either be partway through or all the way done with this campaign.
Yep.
And so we can talk about it all we want with pure conjecture.
Pure conjecture.
But we know what it is we're launching.
We know what it is we're launching. And so we can talk about Secret Project 5, which I just kind of approved the launch video on. The video of me uncomfortably staring at the camera for 30 seconds. Another one of my patented ideas for
see, they do your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
When I suggested you climb the Empire State Building clutching the book to your chest, they didn't go for that.
Well, your ideas are stupid. Sorry, I didn't have another line.
No, I can prove that wrong because last week I pitched to Donald and Taylor a video where you and I are sitting here eating dinner and then you go, like something, like your stomach hurts, and then I lay you down on the table, and then Secret Project 5 bursts out of your chest and skitters across the floor.
And then I say, oh no, not again.
Yeah, see? That mm-hmm. would be so good.
I get, you can't really...
This is why they don't let me write videos.
I mean, that one would be pretty good.
I think it would be pretty good. We'll do it sometime.
Yeah. Wait, what?
No, we won't. When Taylor came to me at the end of last year and said, hey, we need ideas for the final Year of Sanderson video, and mm-hmm. I said, okay, I can come up with some ideas. What have you got so far? And he said, well, we kind of want to do what's in the box, what's in the box? And then I knew from that point on that anything I suggested would be at least not as terrible as that one. So I'm still sad that that one didn't happen, though.
Yeah, we had too many things going on to do that. But hey, you know, another book.
So what is public knowledge about Secret Project 5?
Well, there's no way to know because we don't know when this will go live. We know that they know one exists.
Okay. And they know that it is high Cosmere connectivity.
Yes. Yes. Because you heard us discussing that line.
Yeah. I didn't get to see the video. Mm-hmm. Actually, I probably could have. I just didn't up out of my chair.
Yes.
I preferred to imagine the video, and it was mostly just heavy thumps, and I'm like, oh, they're doing the scene from Mickey and the Beanstalk and Brandon stomping across the floor, but I bet that's not what it was.
You did make a wisecrack of, they're like, can we cut Cosmere from high Cosmere connectivity? And you're like, no, that's just a book that has good Wi-Fi.
Yeah, if we call it a high connectivity book.
Yeah.
That's a book that gets a great signal.
Yeah.
I also suggested cosmectivity as a portmanteau.
Yes.
But once again, Dan's ideas.
I don't think
don't
we're on
made.
Your level. Right?
We have not established a brand of absurdity
mm-hmm.
outside of this podcast, which is nothing but.
Yeah. Gloves are, I would say gloves are off on this podcast, but really, we never put the gloves on on this podcast. And yeah.
Okay.
So, secret novel, what happened? Well, I need a break from things sometimes. And when I need a break from things, I just kind of noodle on something else. People are going to be like, I'm sure, only one this time. Yes, only one this time. Stormlight 5 is a lot of work.
Yeah.
It is, frankly, a bit of a miracle that this manifests in the middle of working on Stormlight 5. And it only did because I had a little bit of momentum on it from a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find out what that is once we do kind of more of the reveals. But it's something I had been writing on maybe for 7-8 years.
Yeah. I remember hearing bits about it long ago.
Yep.
This also, Secret Project 5, was the first Brandon Sanderson work that I, as narrative guy, got to read and give editorial feedback on.
Yep.
Because with the exception of Sunlit Man, which was in its final stages of review, everything else had been finished.
Mm-hmm.
And we are just actually tonight finishing our review of Stormlight 5.
Yep.
And so Secret Project 5 was the one where I got to read the whole thing and say, here's how I think we should change things.
Still have your notes on that. I haven't done the revisions yet because
Stormlight 5.
I'm only at this writing, I'm at like 2/3 of this latest revision, which isn't the last revision.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wrote a bunch of this in Hawaii last year. I took some time and relaxed. I actually had 2 trips to Hawaii last year, one with the whole family and then one with just myself and Emily. And that's where the bulk of this was written, was during those 2 trips. Do you ever need to like take a break and work on something else?
I do. Mm. That's a funny question to answer right now when the last like 2 solid months have been Dan went from depression to severe depression and did nothing of any value to anyone. But yes, historically, I am not the kind of person who can stop writing a book midway to go write a different book and then come back to it. It has to be something that uses a different skill set or a different part of my brain.
Okay.
And often that ends up being, I am going to, you know, take a few days off and I'm going to go like write a role-playing game campaign.
Right.
Or write out an adventure, stat everything. and do that. And then that kind of refreshes the creative well, and I come back to the book.
It depends on the project for me. For instance, a shorter project, I would probably never leave even for a couple of, like a week, like I did with this one.
Mm-hmm.
But Stormlight 5, any given Stormlight book, is like writing four novels.
Yeah.
And if I can time it, which I've been able to do basically for both of those things, where I finish a major sort of arc and then can then work on something else for a while, mm-hmm. and then come back. It's like taking a break between two novels in a series. It's actually kind of refreshing and helpful. And Stormlight books, like, there's so many chunks like that that are 50, 90, 80,000 words
mm-hmm.
that feel like a normal novel to a lot of people. I mean, the rough draft of Stormlight 5 was 480 without the interludes.
Well, and you write them, as I understand, the same way that I've been reading them, which is a single viewpoint beginning to end of the book, and then later we're going to shuffle them all together.
Yep, that's what I'm doing right now, is shuffling. And then that actually makes more work. I wish I didn't have to do it that way, because then the revisions are more complicated, because
mm-hmm.
normally when you're writing a book, and you're writing it beginning to end, which is how I approach my books. Not everyone does.
Mm.
You get a natural instinct for pacing, so you break up the scenes in such a way. If you're jumping between two viewpoints, you'll use the contrast between the viewpoints to help your pacing.
Yeah.
You will skip something in one viewpoint when it's getting to a point that you can skip it, mm-hmm. and then go somewhere else, it's exciting, and you come back, and they've done the boring part, for instance. But sometimes, also, you want them both to hit kind of a climactic moment at the same time, and you can then cut back and forth between two fight scenes and contrast them in the different ways they're doing. You can do all kinds of things like that. But Stormlight books are so big, with mm-hmm. so many characters, that if I do that, I have weaker character arcs, because I'm not immersed enough in the character in order to really shepherd them along to a good climax and pacing for their own sequence. And so for Stormlight, I have to do one of two things. And I've written different books in the series in different ways. I either have to be like, all right, the first third is a novel unto itself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to do full character arc for this character and that. And I'm not going to involve some of these other characters very much, and I'll write that all the way through with all viewpoints. Or I have to do the more common thing, which is, all right, writing Kaladin all the way from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to write, you know, Dalinar all the way from the beginning to the end, and then shuffle them together and then do a lot of revision to make sure that pacing works.
Yeah, that pacing when you are kind of dovetailing four different viewpoints or seven or however many there are.
Yeah.
Seems like it would be very hard, but that's something you and Peter have to do, not me.
Yes, so. It is. It is one of those things with epic fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I have to really watch the sprawl of the number of characters. Like, George is famously really good at this pacing beat between, jump between characters, mm-hmm. but he eventually added so many characters that it threw off the whole pacing for him, and he had to write entire books without groups of characters. Otherwise, the book wouldn't pace like a novel. You wouldn't have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Which has its own problems, where it's like, my favorite character isn't even in this book sort of problems. And Robert Jordan had some of that same issue. Once the character sprawl happens, which is why I built the Stormlight Archive the way I did, which would be more clear. I can talk about it more.
Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Secret Project 5 is much shorter and more compact.
Yes.
That's it's got a handful of, I think, really only two POVs.
Yep. Two viewpoints is a really good, like, I sometimes struggle with one viewpoint books.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice even in Skyward, I have the interludes in those so I can jump to some other viewpoints now and then. So I think my only true one viewpoint books are like the Reckoners books. Or novellas and things. Mm-hmm. And
once you've done multi-viewpoint, it's such a really great tool to do some of the things you were talking about. Like, I'm going to jump time.
Yeah.
And it's much more graceful if I do that by showing you somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or I really want you to understand X thing. And the best way to do that is just see it from their point of view.
Yep.
Especially, I think, with how cinematic we've trained our brains for storytelling, where you can see something from the villain's point of view in one scene. it's hard to go back and just write a single POV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a useful tool, adding that second viewpoint. Something else I wanted to talk about with this, you mentioned high Cosmere connectivity. Mm-hmm. I worked forever trying to figure out how to write that phrase.
Yeah.
Because it had to fit in like two or three words
mm-hmm.
on the screen.
Yeah.
And it had to explain, and I'm not sure if people will understand even still what we're getting across, because what I really wanted to say is, you know, this book isn't intended for first-time Cosmere readers, though if you are a first-time Cosmere reader and you understand that, you'll probably have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of you probably should read a few Cosmere books before you pick this one up, then you will really enjoy it better.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to write. That's not three words.
No, it's hard to get that across because you run the risk of saying, this book is not for you,
right,
to people who would absolutely still enjoy it.
Yeah. If they know they're jumping into kind of a future era where there's a little bit more, well, a lot more Cosmere connectivity, but mm-hmm. the story reads just fine on its own. There are plenty of people who could read this book, not know anything, and enjoy it quite a bit. It doesn't require you to have read other books to understand, but
I'm just imagining now that we're going to start putting on your books
yeah.
like the complexity level like you see on a board game.
Yeah, that's right.
So like this is a 2-dot book instead of just a 1-dot book. Maybe a 3-dot. But yeah.
Yeah. It really is kind of like that. And some people don't like a lot of Cosmere connections. And this one does have them.
Yeah.
It's, you know, got characters from multiple different planets, some you've seen, some you haven't. And it's taking place kind of dealing with future era sort of stuff. So
yeah,
I think most readers will enjoy it, but I do want you to be aware of that, right? Mm-hmm. There are some people who are just like, I just want to read Stormlight Archive, and I don't want to worry about the larger
mess with all this
mess. And this is probably not something they would like,
mm-hmm.
right? So but
yeah, like I think one of the things as I was reading it, because I was keeping this idea in mind of how accessible is it
mm-hmm.
to new readers. And in a lot of ways, I think, imagine Lord of the Rings, except it starts after they've already left the Shire.
Yeah.
And so you don't actually get to see the homeland of anyone in the Fellowship,
mm-hmm.
but you hear about their homeland and they brag about their homeland to each other. That still works.
It
right?
does.
It's very Guardians of the Galaxy. Other than Earth, you don't really see anyone's homeworld.
Mm-hmm.
But you can accept, okay, these are all the adventurers that have come together to do the thing.
I have had readers, I don't know how many, but I've seen it multiple times. You know, insert the, if I had a dime for every time, who have started my books on the Wax and Wayne series. First thing of mine they ever read.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Era 2 of Mistborn, which
yeah.
when I was writing them, I never imagined anyone ever picking Alloy of Law up first
mm-hmm.
and then reading that series. And they said they loved it because it's like, hey, it's like there's this fully realized religion and history to this world. It feels so real. So much has happened and whatnot because, of course, it did.
Yeah.
There's an entire trilogy before.
Trilogy.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think especially in fantasy,
mm-hmm.
readers are much better at keeping their heads above water than maybe we sometimes give them credit for.
Did you ever do that when you were a younger reader back before we had the internet to tell us what each book in a series was? Did you ever pick one up, start reading it, and only later on figure out that this was book 3 or something?
I actually did that just a few years ago.
Oh.
I went to Gen Con
uh-huh.
and I got a Megan O'Keefe book,
uh-huh.
City of Something, and I read about half of it until I realized, oh, okay, there's some context that I don't have, and I realized it was the second in her series, and I still enjoyed it. I still mm-hmm. thought it was great. I did stop at that point to go back and read the first one first, but yeah, hadn't really felt lost, just intrigued by all this stuff that it hadn't explained to me yet.
That happened to me a number of times, and I got really annoyed by it when I was younger because it usually was a book that didn't make it clear in the cover material that mm-hmm. it was a second mm-hmm. or third book. And I always used to think, why on earth would they make this so unclear? Is the designer just bad? And then I realized science fiction and fantasy go through waves where the marketing sometimes thinks that a series is a selling point and sometimes thinks that readers have series fatigue and tries to hide the fact that it's a series. And so sometimes you will get mm-hmm. book series that come out where they'll take the numbers off the spines. Yeah. To try to get people, you know, to not be intimidated by how many books there are in the series and things mm-hmm. like that. Once I found out, I'm like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
What do you think you're going to do? You think you're going to trick people into buying the new one when it comes out? And then I guess do what you did. They're like, oh, I've already bought book 9, so I guess I have to read books 1 through 8.
Yeah.
It just...
Which sometimes happens.
Yes.
But not very often. This case was weird because it was a swag bag book at Gen mm. Con. And so it was... Free right. to new readers, book 2 of a series that you are unfamiliar with, which I kind of go back and forth because on one hand, I actually did go read the first one.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, how many people do? Are you doing a disservice to the author and to the readers? I don't know.
Yeah, it gets into that whole publicity thing with books where there's a lot of smart people who know how to do their job, but they often get promoted out of books mm-hmm. because books don't pay enough for publicity. And you're nodding. Your stepmom was in that. Yeah, where you can earn much better money in other publicity fields than books.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are like starters. That doesn't say that every publicist is new. There's some really great yeah, ones that I've known for long term. But you end up with a lot of this. And so the publicists don't learn the ins and outs. They have budget. I'd guess what happens. They have budget for that second book publicity. They're like, let's put it in the swag bag. Where the smart thing to do would be to say, to publicize the second book, we will put copies of the first book in the swag bag to get people hooked on the series. But, you know, you don't have budget for the first book right now.
Yeah.
So you have to go talk your way through why we should do it this way. Mm. And
yeah, it's difficult
mm-hmm.
to do that kind of thing. When I find a new book that looks uh-huh. interesting, the first thing I do will check inside the cover, uh-huh. you know, on the spine if there's a number, or inside the front cover where it'll yeah. say other books in this series or other books by who's this. And sometimes even that yeah. I think is purposefully obfuscated for reasons you've discussed.
Pratchett, you have to go to the fans to figure out where
yeah.
to start.
You gotta go to Wikipedia or a fan site.
It's ridiculous.
And if it's something like Cosmere, mm-hmm. where it's different series, but they're connected. There's plenty of authors that do this. Lee Modisett uh-huh. has this.
Stephen King.
Stephen King.
And I got it from Michael Moorcock mm-hmm. and Isaac Asimov. So it goes way back.
Yeah, where you have to see, well, okay, what's the chronological reading order? Mm-hmm. What is the suggested reading order? Which books are considered good entry points to the series? It can get very complex.
It can. You know what I think we should do? I think we should do an episode all on publicity for books because it is a weird world.
The great thing about an episode like that is that everything we say in it will be wrong by the time it airs.
How's that been?